Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And guess who we got in the studio today? Finally.
Who?
We finally got the third member of the family, the Brown Liquor Report.
Hey, what's happening, y'all?
Hi.
I'm glad to be here.
So we've had the count on, we've had Jazz Hands on, and looking for an opportunity to get you in here. And so today, to close out our Black History Month, we're going to talk about some black church, maybe, and faith stories.
So, amen. All right.
So, I heard you got a story to tell.
I got some.
Okay.
So, for those who don't know, our faith story series is where we just go through different explorations of faith from people. A lot of times, you know, you hear churchy testimonies about what happened and God picked you out of the muck and mire, clay, and all of that stuff. But there's other types of stories, yep. You know. Mm-hmm. Some sound like that, some sound completely different. And mm-hmm. we've had Tia on the show before, which was a great episode. That was from agnosticism to Christianity. And then we had Reels and Fields on the show.
Yeah.
Tanisha and Janelle.
Yeah.
Which was great because you had one was Catholicism and one was just life, just living. And it was, yeah. I mean, it was really interesting. So this is, I think, the third one. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to leave anyone out. I don't think it.
I think this is it.
Number three.
Yeah.
Faith Stories with DJ Black Shaw. All right, brother. So.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
Okay. Sorry, I don't got the music under the thing.
Yeah. Now you cool. And I don't have any Kleenex. Nah, I'm just. I'm going to be fine.
We're going to try to see what happens.
Emotional.
All right. So.
We're going to make it.
You grew up church boy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. From when I can remember, I was always in church. I mean, we talking about Wednesday Bible study.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, because I grew up in a single parent home with my mom. So if she was somewhere, pretty much I was there.
Yep. Yeah.
So
yeah.
There was Wednesday Bible study. Later on, you know, maybe by the time I got to, you know, age 12 or whatever, I was in the choir.
Mm-hmm.
So I had Saturday choir rehearsal, you know, Sunday. I remember there being more Bible study in the mornings before church. And then more church. And then maybe a little bit.
Sunday school like that?
I had Sunday school. I had Sunday school up to when I was 16.
Okay.
So.
I ain't have to worry about that because we challenged in the morning. We showing up for service.
We got there good and early.
Okay.
And that was my story from, like I said, from as far back as I can remember.
Okay.
To around 16, 17, where I kind of pushed back and was like, I kind of want to sleep in. I don't want to go to church today.
Hmm.
You know, and, you know, my mother usually, you know, was okay with that.
Okay.
You know, but there were some Sundays. She's like, you going.
Okay. What denomination is this?
So we start, I would say my background is mostly non-denominational slash charismatic.
So you go with jeans and Jordans to church?
No. Oh. No. That came later on.
Okay.
But I mean, we were in the first church I remember was a very, very large church.
Okay.
So I was very familiar at an early age with speaking in tongues, casting out demons. Those are the kind of churches I've been in. Started out in a big church,
mm-hmm.
mostly predominantly white leadership, and after I guess around 11 or 12, some of the black members of the church branched off and created their own church. And so it was like we had these, you know, it was a white church, a nice mixed church, white leadership, mostly black
mm-hmm.
congregation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty white, you know, as far as how the services are run, you know, the music, the praise and worship music. And the people that branched off were like Afrocentric. Like the church we went to was like, we went from that to like this Afrocentric church. Everybody wore dashikis.
Wakanda.
Yeah, it was Wakanda. It was the Wakanda churches, and but they were still, you know, speaking in tongues and all types of things like that. So
you grew up a charismatic church.
Charismatic church.
First, I thought you were talking about Carlton Pearson's church. It's like white leadership. Black people broke off.
And I've seen him preach plenty of times. Okay. He came to that church pretty often.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that sounds like an Assemblies of God or something like that. But okay, so
oh, do you want me to say? Do you want me?
No,
say
no, you don't have to say. You don't have to say the thing. Okay, yeah, I don't want you.
All right,
yeah, I don't want them coming after you.
But I'm from the DC area.
Okay, okay.
So I've been my whole life.
Process of elimination, y'all.
Yeah, yeah. It ain't, but the church is initially in DC and okay. moved to Maryland.
Okay,
years later. So.
All right, so you start off in church speaking in tongues.
I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't speak in tongues.
You were just observing that.
You were like a rebel.
And that's what I felt. I felt like there was something wrong with me for a while because I was, you know, people were learning to speak in tongues and getting prayed on. And, you know, I wanted to have that gift as well. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, being prayed for and my mother giving me advice on, you know, how to listen to God. And I'm like, I don't hear it.
Yeah.
Mm. I don't hear it. So I'm like, is something wrong with me? Am I a heathen? Am I not grasping this because something is wrong with me?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's kind of, you kind of know early on. I remember I was at a church one time and they were like laying people out. And like, and so like there was a line and I just so happened to come down. I didn't come for it, but I was standing up there. And so the dude is going down the line, knocking everybody out. And I was like, ain't no way in hell I'm falling down. It ain't gonna happen. And the dude kind of like pushed my forehead and I just kind of stood there. Cause this is not like, I knew I'm not gonna fake this. Mm-hmm. And yeah. You ain't doing nothing to really take me out of here. So it's just,
I can't tell you how many times in my life I've been in that situation. And wow. That was also one of those things where I thought something was going on with me, you know, early on. And, you know, as I matured, you know, I realized that, you know, it's just, it wasn't that serious. But I mean, it was, yeah, situations where, you know, I get prayed on. Mm-hmm. So, and everybody falling out and, you know, I just be standing there. I'm like, okay, can I go? Like, so I just want to go back a little bit. After the Afrocentric church that I went to, for whatever reason, I was still young, I don't know, but we left the church.
Okay.
And we went from that church, which was probably about 200, 250 members. So okay. It was a nice size church.
Yeah.
We went to a church that was in somebody's living room.
Wow. Wow.
Literally in somebody's house. Wow. In a living room. And it got deep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's when it got real deep.
So for the people who don't know, like, especially for the people who don't go to church and don't usually, like, a church size is not mega church size. That's mega church for a reason. Average church size is around 70 to 100 members. Mm-hmm. That's a mid-sized church. A lot of churches stick in around the you know, 12 to 25 range, and that's your church, especially like some of these storefront churches where mm-hmm. you see like Chicken and Waffles, Braid Shop, Apostolic Assemblies, you know, like it's that type of thing. It's a small situation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, going from 250, which is a nice, you
that's
know,
a nice size church, yeah,
to living room small so size.
It was very intimate. I'll just say that everybody brought a Danish or something like that. Set in the kitchen table, you know, so we ate a little bit before service, and then there was praise and worship and church, and it would last. I mean, you ain't had we there were no hours, nobody worried about football. Mm. Like, it was, so we might be there at 9 o'clock in the morning and we might not get out to 3:30.
Yeah.
3:30, wow. You know.
Were you going to that living room church with your mom still?
Yeah.
During that time, do you remember anybody sharing with you why you left the 250 member church to that living room experience?
I don't know what caused that transition.
Okay.
I just know that the pastor of that church went to the first mega church.
Mm-hmm.
He came from that church too, and you know, he branched off and he you know, went there. But so when I was a little bit younger, I sat, you know, through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bit much. I mean, 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock some days. When you're like 13, 14.
When you go down to those small sizes, like you think about that, like if you're in, let's say you're in undergrad and you go into a classroom, there's 400 kids in there, you know, you can kind of blend in. But when it's just like you and six other people in there, like, you better have some answers. Like, you better have done your homework. And so when you're in a small church setting like that, like y'all know each other, like you said, it's real intimate, but it ain't no room to hide. Like, you can't hide behind the end table. Like, you got to be there on whatever. So, yeah, that's a...
That we eventually... I don't know if we pushed or what, but we eventually started going to the arcade during church.
Oh.
Oh, the kids.
Yeah, we would play ball. Like, I think they were just... I think they were just annoyed with us being so restless.
Yeah.
So we go out and play ball. There's a basketball court down the street. We, you know, walk down. We were in Greenbelt, so we walked down to the rec center.
Yeah.
You know, and there was also, and it was like the old town Greenbelt.
Yeah.
So they had a, I don't know if it was a 7-Eleven. I think it was a 7-Eleven that had had a couple games in there, and we go in there and play.
So was this also like a charismatic living room situation, or was it different?
To the extreme.
Wow.
To the extreme.
That is awkward. That is
so to the extreme. So, I mean, this is the first time me witnessing exorcisms.
Wow.
And things like that. You know, people laid out on the floor. Sometimes people be throwing up. And it was.
In the living room stories. On the floor?
Yeah.
Oh, my good comment.
On the floor. In the living room on the floor.
Not on my African American carpet.
Yeah, y'all can't come over here no more.
Okay. Brother Johnson keep bring throwing a bucket. Okay.
Well, I mean, they were buckets. I just remember as a very young kid thinking like we might be diving into some stuff we shouldn't be diving into.
Okay.
And you know, as I got older, I have a different opinion
about it
on that. I mean, it's kind of along the same lines, but I think without getting too deep, I think there were a lot of members in that church with unchecked mental illness.
Okay.
And you know, I'm no doctor, so I have no diagnosis, but you know, I do know that, you know, depression's a huge issue. Not just depression, but other mental illnesses are huge. And I think many of us have definitely heard that, you know, you can pray those things away. If you're obedient, those things will go away. And it's like, you know, God made professionals.
But this sounds like there's a progression, though. So you're at the mega church where it's a little charismatic, to the smaller church, the breakoff church, where it's a lot more charismatic. Now as you get smaller in the congregation, you get more.
You see more.
I guess, yeah, there's more esoteric in this worship expression.
It's more loose. Yeah, okay. It's more loose. More unorganized. You know, because you don't have the time restraints anymore. And there were also I didn't mention there were also prayer meetings on Saturdays at night, and they were in my house.
Ooh, child.
They were in my house, and so the prayer meetings might start around 7, 8. Mm-hmm. People come in different times, but you know, most people be in the house by 9, and there were at times, I mean, we wouldn't get out to 2,
and then turn around and go to church all day.
And then go back to church.
Oh, that's a lot.
It was a lot.
So you say up until, you know, the age of 16, or was this going on through your graduation?
The prayer meetings at the house, went on until I was about 17,
18. Okay. So how did seeing all of that develop? Like, how did you find yourself responding to the not being able to hide, you know, kind of finagling your way to the basketball court? Like, how did that impact maybe your faith walk over the coming years?
Yeah, so like I said before, I think there were some things that we might, you know, could have been diving into that we shouldn't have. And it initially came to a full-on like rejection.
Okay.
Of religion, of church, because I just thought it just was, you know. And I mean, again, that's extreme.
Yeah.
That's very extreme.
Yeah. So let me ask you. So you have these prayer meetings from like 6 to, you know, after midnight. Then you have these long church services from 9 to, you know, late in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. How much of this is educational versus, like, how much of this is teaching versus the actual experience?
The prayer meetings, I mean, the prayer meetings were prayer meetings.
Yeah, so that's, okay.
So it was, you know, you lay it all on the table, you know, what's going on, everybody who needs to be interceded for. And there might have, there definitely was some, I mean, everybody had their Bible. So, you know, if somebody thought of a Bible verse or a passage in the Bible that, you know, pertained to somebody's situation at that moment, you know, they would talk about it. But, you know, the prayer meetings were
intense
and,
okay, lots, so it's not study, it's not Bible study, it's prayer.
It wasn't Bible study. So, okay. I think that was Wednesdays.
Okay. How long was the Bible study?
Those weren't long. I don't think those were long. Those might have been like to 9.
So the study part is short.
But
the,
7:30 to 9 or so.
Right.
Yeah. You know, give people enough time to get from work.
Okay.
Get things settled. But yeah, that was my, and so as I got older, 15, 16, 17, you know, I'm starting to see my friends more. My friends would come to my house, and you know, I remember Saturday nights. I'm like, yeah, I don't come around here. And so
yes, you want to get prayed for,
right? And that happened to me. That happened to me plenty of nights. You know,
wow.
As I got a little bit older, you know, hanging out a little bit later, you know, praying that everybody was gone by the time I got home, and they weren't. And you know, I might have had a little weed, or might have drank a little bit, and you know, I'm trying to just go to bed. Right. Hey!
Right, come here. Come,
let's pray for you. You know, you've been on my mind. I'm like, oh Lord God, it's gonna be another hour. I'm high, like, and you know that olive oil comes out.
Oh yeah, the oil. That drink.
Yeah, that
can be oiling up my coffee and annoying everybody all day.
Yeah, but you know, I do believe in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly believe in prayer. I don't know if that brand of Christianity was okay, or that interpretation of it was okay. But I do believe that the energy and praying for, you know, people, and I believe it works.
Okay.
I do believe it works. Now, I also believe it works in other religions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that Christianity, because I was taught that everybody on the planet, because that was used to be my biggest question growing up. Like, okay, I'm a Christian, but mainly because of geography.
Right.
Like, I was born into it, you know. It was taught from grandma and great grandma, you know, they were in the church. So it's like that person in that remote village in, you know, whatever country that's never been exposed to Christianity or, you know, this brand. Because I was taught this is the only brand. This is how you're supposed to be a Christian.
Yeah.
You know, so you telling me they're going to hell?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And why? That was my question. Like, what, you know, this is basically, like I said, it's on, you know, based on geography and experience. And why does this person that's never been exposed to Christianity, especially this form, this denomination or whatever, why do they go to hell?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the response was always everybody on the planet at some time or the other will be exposed to it.
That is the belief. Yep.
They will be exposed to it. And if they don't accept Jesus, then that's on them.
That is so improbable.
But that's why you get incidents like that, John Chow,
who goes to
North Sentinelese Islands, because everyone has to be exposed in order for this to be true. And so they got to do their part.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that was always, every clergy person I ran into or talked to, you know, I had clergy in my family, would always ask that question. You know, I can't get over that. Mm-hmm. I can't get over that, you know, I'm not accepting that answer.
Yeah.
It's not realistic. There's 7 billion people on this earth. Like, we're so small.
Right.
You know, my experience is so small compared to the other 7 billion people on the planet. Like, how are we right? How are we just our little circle? Are we just completely right? And I always thought that, you know, going back to prayer and things like that, I never thought that, you know, one religion can do certain the right and only way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe that, you know, Jews, Christians, Hindu, Buddhists, whatever, you know, if their intentions are good and, you know, then that's all God, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Right.
That's just.
Okay, that's so just, let me back up. So you get through this period. You're like 17 years old, and I don't know if you go away to college or whatever, but you kind of stepped away from this environment.
Sure.
And so you, for a while, didn't want to have anything to do with this. Is that correct?
I didn't want, because that was my only way. That was really my only exposure.
Yeah.
So I know I didn't want anything to do with that.
Okay.
But I did still hold on to some of those beliefs.
Okay.
For a good portion of my 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, I believed, you know, my early 20s, I believed that, you know, gays getting married was going to bring down the country. Like, yeah. That was my thought process.
Right.
Because it had been ingrained in me from childhood. And, you know, 20s is pretty damn close to childhood. And just, you know, through learning and through reading and, you know, I've, you know, rejected all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those types of beliefs and things like that of, you know, being everything being so extra rigid.
Mm-hmm.
Even what my definition of sin is.
Yeah.
Has definitely changed well into my 30s. I'm almost 40.
So was this a process or was there a situation that you can remember where something clicked for you and like, wait a minute, maybe the stuff that I mean, because you had this feeling that it mm-hmm. wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
But did you just over time learn to strip away some of those beliefs, or was it?
Yeah, it was definitely over time. I can recall a few instances. I remember when we were talking about, you know, the gay marriage thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember one instance where a coworker, I said something to my coworker, like, you know, that ain't right, you know,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. And she broke it down for me. Like, it just made mm-hmm. me put myself in that person's shoes that, you know, just wants, you know, love and the protections that marriage, you know, provides, you mm-hmm. know, like as far as legal protections.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as, you know, the way people want to show their love, like it's not one way to do that. And that started, you know, I won't say it started, but that definitely was eye opening for me as far on that topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, you know, I mean, totally reversed that, you know, at this point in my life, like, you know, I'm just all for love and
yeah.
mm-hmm.
getting it however
yeah.
you can get it, because it ain't easy to get.
Yeah.
Okay.
And love who you gonna love. And, you know, just rejecting all those things that were, you know, based in bigotry and
ignorance.
So you're still you've settled on some things, you're still evolving, I'm guessing, like most people. Like mm-hmm. what type of influences do you have to move you towards where you want to be or where you are?
Whew. That's a loaded question. What type of influences? I just try to read a lot, man. I try to read mm-hmm. a lot about things that I'm not familiar with.
Okay.
And just listen to people's stories and listen to other people, you know, doing mm-hmm. during this the podcast, you know, the Brown Liquor Report that we're doing now. We've had different guests, different walks of life
mm-hmm.
and different experiences. And, you know, that has helped tremendously.
Yeah.
Both of my co-hosts are, you know, very woke and very intelligent.
Yeah,
and
y'all a brilliant bunch of
them. Yeah, y'all are.
We've all learned things from each other, just discussing topics for the show and so they influenced me tremendously. Yeah.
So have you seen anybody from the old gang? The old Prayer to 2 a.m. gang?
Yeah. Ooh. I did.
Okay.
I did very recently. I at a church service. Yeah.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, yeah. It was wild. It was wild. She still looks the same.
Okay.
Like, after all these years. And I recognized her voice immediately.
Okay.
You know, she tapped me on my shoulder. I was like, hey, gave her a hug, still the same size, still, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, called my mom and told her that I saw her. And she's like, yeah, don't she look the same? Don't she look good? But it's funny that you brought that up
mm-hmm.
because what I didn't mention was that there were other kids
mm-hmm.
at the church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there weren't a lot. Like I said, it was, you know, that smaller church. There were about four of us.
Yeah.
I was the youngest, and the others were about, like, I might have been 12, 13. They might have been 15, 16.
Okay.
Around that age. And, you know, I've been brainstorming about a book, writing a book,
mm-hmm.
and doing interviews of people. And I would love to I mean, I know how to catch up with one of them. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the lady I bumped to in church, she had a son too that I haven't seen in 25 mm-hmm. years that I would, you know, love to see and just interview and just talk to and see where, you know, their path is. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it's funny that you brought that up.
That's got to be. So this church service that you saw this woman from, it was just regular church service. It was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. So you think she's out? She's out of the living room?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay.
Mm. I mean, I don't know if she might be out of the living room, but okay. I mean, I think everybody's out of the living room.
Okay. Know? Well, yeah, they still in the living room. Well, there's some churches that just stay that size, and actually, from a financial perspective, that saves a lot of overhead, and you can do other things.
I mean, that church is, dissolved.
Okay.
The pastor passed some years down the road, and people gone to different
other churches and absorbed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what about now? Like, you said that you found yourself questioning, you rejecting, but you just ran into somebody at church. So where do you feel like you stand now with your understanding and your participation? We talk mm-hmm. a lot about participation.
Right.
Like, we love God. Before second day, we were not always going. Sure. And kind of looked at that. So what do you think about that?
I am definitely not always going. I would be interested, you know, in joining a church.
Mm-hmm.
And not mainly for, you know, my walk in religion, but, you know, for the fellowship and you know, for the cultural part of it.
Yeah, the community. Yeah.
The community, mm-hmm. I think it's very important. And especially I have kids now, so I think that's very important. So it would definitely need to be, the place would definitely need to be vetted by me big time. Because, you know, right. You know how we get now, man. You know, we hear one thing which we don't like, and we're like, oh, they cut off.
Yeah.
You know, I ain't going here no more. I can't believe he said that. You know, and it's like, you know, sometimes we got to fall back off that a little bit. Right. Now, if you're talking about my humanity and talking about other people's humanity and, right. you know, saying they don't have a right to, you know, live or be, then I might have a problem with that. And unfortunately, there are a lot of churches that...
I was about to say, that's why people be getting canceled.
That's a lot of... Yeah, that's where I draw the line.
Okay.
We can have different interpretations on, you know, text, mm-hmm. You know, biblical text and things like that. But yeah, when you start talking about people's lives and, you know, their right to live, then that's where I can't rock with you.
So you would still consider yourself Christian then after
all of that? This,
yeah. It's okay. It's no
pressure.
That's
a good question. I'm Christian by experience. Like, mm-hmm. I'm Christian by culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the culture I've always known. Like, I'm not Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
I've never even been to a mosque.
Okay.
But how do I answer this?
Take your time.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm still trying to find my way. And just try to understand other, you know, walks.
Mm-hmm.
And other faiths. And, you know, I've, you know, dabbled into Buddhism a little bit.
Okay.
And, you know, read certain things. I haven't read much about anything else but Buddhism. So I can't call myself like a Christian.
It's tough
because, like I said, you know, it's something I got to work through, because the way Christianity was defined to me,
mm-hmm.
from, you know, from childhood, like,
right.
you're not a Christian unless you believe this story
and
this text and everything in this
mm-hmm.
book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not there right now.
Okay.
I believe that it's the greatest book ever written.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe everything literally.
Mm-hmm.
All the stories, the parting of the Red Sea, the Immaculate Conception, I don't,
mm-hmm.
I have issues with
it's
that.
Okay.
I have issues with the stories. I have issues with Eve being created from a rib,
mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. things like that. So I can, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that means just because I can take, you know, to read the book and get great, you know, advice from it and how to, you know, walk in my life and with my children and things like that. I reject some of it too.
Mm-hmm. Rightfully so.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's something I got to think about. Am I a Christian? And was that definition that was given to me of what a Christian is, mm-hmm. which I'm not, does that mean I'm not, or does it mean I still am? I don't know. And I'm going to think about this tonight.
Right.
Well, this is a great question.
If it helps, I ask myself this question once a day, at least once a day, because, you know, I feel like I'm a Christian until they kick me out, because I don't really, you know, knowing what I know, yeah, I don't hold a lot of this stuff literally. I do understand why mm-hmm. it was written the way it was mm-hmm. and what it actually is, whether this is a novel or this is a, you know, creation myth, or this is a, like, I understand where all this comes from and why it is. So for me, it doesn't have to be I don't have to hold literally, like I was taught to, like, you got to believe all of this, or mm-hmm. if one part falls apart, then the whole thing falls apart. I don't believe mm-hmm. the Bible is a house of cards. I believe it's a collection of literature, mm-hmm. and different types of literature. And so if I define for myself that, you know, I'm a Christian because, like, 98% of the stuff Jesus did was worth following. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think, you know, If I define it as I'm following Christ, then I can stay there. And that's how I typically end up answering for myself. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we talked about the racism of Jesus on the show, and then we talked about, well, we didn't talk about, like, everybody always seems to think that the Lazarus story is a great story. And I'm thinking, like, Jesus really, I can't go with him on that one. He let Jesus hears about his sick friend, then he waits a couple days, then goes to see him. By the time he gets there, the guy's been dead for 4 days. Jesus cries, you know what I'm saying? Like, they can say, you can't go in there. The guy's dead. He's stinking. Jesus goes in there, or goes to the tomb and calls him out. And then there's this whole big thing, and everyone's like, look, he called Lazarus. I was like, but Jesus let him die. Not just that, Jesus also let all that grief happen to all of those people. Mm-hmm. Like, he just let that go, just for what? So he could, I mean, if he knew he was going to resurrect, you know, a few right. days, he didn't need to use Lazarus as an example for that. So, like, I have different readings of things. With that one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but sure. For the most part,
see, and I think that's a great story.
The Lazarus story. Uh-huh. I'm not. I think it's a great story. Also,
I mean,
my
perspective on it.
I also think Jesus was late, and that had an effect on people.
I mean, he tried it. I'm surprised nobody swung on him. Like, I heard you were powerful.
Yeah.
And I would really like for you to help.
Yeah.
You know, this man that you say is your friend. But the way that I've analyzed that story as an adult mm-hmm. kind of matches gaining an understanding about timing mm-hmm. that maybe at that time it resonated with me, that, you know, we say a lot, he may not come when you want him, but he'll be there right on time, which absolutely does not make any sense, because Jesus, when I want late. You is when you on time, yeah. right? But I just think that life kind of unfolds in a way where I learned a lesson mm-hmm. about timing, looking at that particular story. And I mean, it is what it is, but the way you just broke it down, I'm like, really?
Yeah, I'm in the minority on this one.
That thing was huge.
I know that I don't understand this the same way everyone else does.
Okay.
Now, I get why there's lots of knowledge to be mined from the story.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think about, like, all of those people who love Lazarus that was sitting there with grief for 4 days mm-hmm. because Jesus wanted to wait 2 days to come. And I was like, yo, you brought Lazarus back. What'd you do for that grief? Like, how'd you heal that? Like, mm-hmm. how'd you... There's a lot
Even the scare that you gave
him. Yeah, there's a lot of... So anyway,
grief
I'm not...
Grief is part of life. That's what they'll say. They'll say, you know, grief and pain is just part of preparing you for the afterlife. And
it's just a lot. It's a lot to deconstruct in these messages that you get. But
so for most of Jesus' life, I'm cool with. And I'm like,
right.
oh, he
did
most of the stuff
right. 98%.
Yeah, 98%.
That's
a good
right
percentage. So anyway,
what
I
you
end
tried.
Up answering the question like, okay, Jesus is worth the follow for me. You know what I'm saying? So that's where I end up. Most times, like maybe about 70% of the mm-hmm. times I ask myself mm-hmm. that question. Sometimes it's just like, I don't know.
Right.
It's okay.
One thing that has come up in faith stories and even some of the episodes that we've done is that we don't see it all the same way. Like, I think this is a question about our own evolution from people telling us how it's going to be mm-hmm. versus us gaining our own understanding of how things are, which is a journey, you know, in and of itself. And no one has come in here and said the very same thing about, you know, even how they see themselves. Do they still label themselves as a Christian? You know, for me, it's the love story part. It's that here is such a strong example of love that even if all the facts or the stories don't line up, what shines through is, to me, a manual on how to treat other people. Here's something that kind of can give you a guide if you were looking for one.
Yeah.
Here's a guide on how to love people in the various relationships, connections that you might find yourself in with them. So when you say, like, I believe in a strong prayer life, you know, or I believe in the power of prayer, do you find yourself, like, I guess my real question is, now that you know what you know and there are some things that you don't quite know how you feel about, what does your spiritual self-care look like these days?
Lately, it has been non-existent. Hmm. Just and I know what I need. It's just hard to get sometimes, just with the daily struggle of just trying to, you know, keep your head above water with work and mm-hmm. and kids. It's just nonstop, you know, trying to find a little bit of rest for myself. But you know, I do want to start, and I need to set out some time, maybe on Saturdays or Sundays. I do want to go. There's a Buddhist temple mm-hmm. in Southwest. I want to start going there and just sitting and just meditating. Mm-hmm. I used to meditate. I remember it daily, every morning when I lived in Silver Spring a few years ago, because my family was out of the house mm-hmm. and I still had enough time for me to just sit. And I had these wonderful, like, I was in a high rise, like these all windows in the house.
Yeah.
And it was just like very peaceful. And like when it was quiet, and I had about 30 minutes, you know, every day to do that. Now it's not the situation.
Okay.
You know, yeah. So I'm trying to figure out how to do that. And, you know, with the time given okay. in a day.
Yeah.
But I just got to make it. I just got to make the time to just get myself together. I'm kind of all over the place these days.
That happens. I mean, that's how life goes.
Life, man. So before you know, it's like, it's almost March. Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm.
It was just January.
2019 ain't playing with y'all.
I can't, like, I'm 40 this year. I'm turning 40.
Yes.
40.
Well, thank you very much for coming through, sharing your story with us. I learned a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So did I.
Some of the others have heard some of my stories before, and it's, you know, I got stories galore, but that's just a little bit of it. But yeah, I appreciate you guys for having me.
All right, so where can they hear more of DJ Black Show?
Absolutely. So I'm one of the three co-hosts of the Brown Liquor Report.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Music. Just search for the Brown Liquor Report. We're on Twitter at B Liquor Report. That's not liquor. Okay. It's liquor spelled, you know,
like
the proper
liquor.
Way.
Yeah. I was supposed to say the King's English.
The King's English. Yeah, you can look up for us there. I also DJ. So I usually do a patio series during the summer. I'm available for cookouts, bar mitzvahs, whatever. Whatever you want to do, I'm available. Just reach out to me on Instagram. I'm at DJ Black Shaw. That's DJ BlackShah. And that's where you can find me. We do a weekly podcast. We have a ball doing it. You know, we eventually started it. Initially started it just to, you know, just have a safe space to break down mm-hmm. it's all the weekly events, because your timeline is a hot mess. It's a hot ass mess, especially these days. Like, we started in Obama years,
That's true. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, we started in Obama.
Y'all was a lot happier back then.
Yeah, there were still the attacks on him.
Yeah,
but right. We had to break down, and you know, there still was a Republican Party.
You got a gaslighter,
chief. But for most of our people, actually, I think most of our people listen to the Brown Liquor Report. But if you do not, you absolutely should. I mean, this is a group of brilliant people over there, actually breaking down things for you. And I was talking to somebody a couple weeks ago, and I was like, yeah, I always learn something when I'm listening to that show, which is, and it's always more than one thing. So I love getting that take on culture. Like, I don't get that from other outlets, particularly mainstream outlets. And podcasting is a way for people to get their voices out, and these voices are very important, and you need them in your life. So definitely check out the crew over at the Brown Liquor Report.
Yeah, look us up, man.
All right, y'all, for Faith Uncut, I'm yours, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
All right, DJ Black Shaw.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.